At Quite the Thing Media, we aim to bring you the best podcasts produced by independent creators, made without constraints.
Hi, this is Ralf Henel from the Baltic Sea coast of Germany. I'm a storyteller, kung fu coach, author, publisher, actor, and I'm very happy having been invited by Jeff, aka the podcast father, interviews all sorts of creators, talking to them about what they're passionate about, and enjoy the podcast.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster with your host, the podcast father.
Welcome to the Halloween episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff, aka Podcast Father. I have a very special guest with me today. It is Ralph Hanel. He's a self-defense expert in kung fu. Ralph, you've even been in a movie, right? What was the name of that movie? Quantum Shock?
That's right. Yeah, it was Quantum Shock. It was actually two movies back then that came out of a YouTube series, but yeah, a really hands-on sci-fi action movie that was made in Canada.
You've wrote a book even, but how I actually connected with you, you were on a three-part episodes of Cold War Conversations with our good friend Ian Saunders. We actually connected through that. Episodes 177, 181, 182 is what I have. You told an amazing story of your series of events and huge things that happened to you during the Cold War. You're arrested, interrogated.
By the Stasi, yeah.
Yeah, you have incredible stories there. So I'm glad to have you on today, but like I said in the beginning, we're actually going to have a little bit of a Halloween theme. Hopefully Ralph will come back one day and we can talk more about all the other great things he's created. But hey, man, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Well, it's absolutely my pleasure. I love talking about the old stories, the things that happened to preserve it. And yes, there are exciting things that absolutely fit Halloween, I must say. So I still get the shakes when I think about it. The two stories, actually, one is a ghost story, and I'm not the kind of ghost hunter or anything like this. And one of the movies I really, really like, Room 1408 with John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson, came in 2007, so much later. This was a complete surprise to me, the ghost story, when it happened. So I was with the family. My son had been born in the summer of 2000. Now it was 2002. We were on the way to Vancouver Island, Victoria, capital of British Columbia. It was nice weather. Everything was peaceful. The Victoria, the mother of my son, we stayed at her sister's house and her husband, lovely house. So you have to imagine Victoria, British Columbia, is typically a city where a lot of seniors settle. So it's very picturesque, quiet, but a wonderful city. So we were in this house. The day went on. In the evening, I went upstairs, room that wasn't much in it, to put my son to bed. So naturally, I wanted to start reading a bedtime story to him. He was on the bed. I was sitting on the side of the bed, and on the wall, there was literally nothing. So instead of him looking at me listening, he suddenly started to look at the wall and started to play peekaboo, covering his eyes, taking the hands away, peekaboo. And at the moment, at this time, I didn't think much of it. I said,
how old was he when this happened? I'm just trying to...
He was just barely two.
Oh, wow. Okay. So he's looking at the wall playing peekaboo. Wow.
Yeah, so that's an age where kids don't make anything up yet to scare the parents or to play a prank, anything like this. So I was telling him, I said, Tyrone, Daddy is here. I'm trying to read a story. And he just looked briefly at me. Then he looked at the wall again and started to giggle and played peekaboo again. And I thought, that is kind of odd. But hey, what you gonna do? Kids do things that seems silly to adults. So eventually I got to read him the story, put him to bed. And then his mother came up, laid down with him. I went down into the house to her sister and her husband. We talked later that night. I went up. The bed was very little, so I was lying on a mattress, air mattress, with a sleeping bag at the foot end of the bed. Fell asleep pretty good. Okay, that was still one of those nighttime CDs running for kids with nature noises so that they sleep better. I had the remote lying next to me on the floor, turned the CD off, fell asleep. So the next, bam, it's early, well, not that early morning. So I still remember it's the moment you wake up and I just feel I'm lying on my side and I feel how the sleeping bag that was half covering my face goes up onto the shoulder and is slowly sliding down the shoulder, really in slow motion. So first I thought, okay, it might be the dog or so, he's pulling the sleeping bag away, but then no, I wouldn't do it in slow motion. Maybe my son came up and is pulling the sleeping bag away to wake me up, now playing a prank, something. But I felt my hair in the back of my head really standing up. So I wanted to surprise him, of course. So I was waiting and then jumped up and wanted to yell something. But there was no body. There wasn't anything. And I could still feel, or I'm feeling it right now, I could still feel, but I was lying on my side. The sleeping bag was sliding up and then down the shoulder. So that's physically impossible.
They were still sleeping in the bed? You could see them?
No, they were already gone. They were downstairs.
Oh, you were all alone in the room completely. Okay.
Absolutely, completely alone. So I had thought that he had crawled up the stairs to wake me up and as he usually did, pouncing on the bed to wake me up. So I thought, okay, still wasn't really thinking much about it other than feeling that my hair was standing up. So I went downstairs. Then somebody said, what? Oh, you're already up? I said, I was kidding. I was trying to make a joke. Said, yeah, the ghost woke me up. And then the sister of Tyrone's mother, she said, oh, the old man woke you up. And then Victoria said, what the heck are you guys talking about it? I said, I don't know. I was just making a joke that the ghost woke me up. And then sister said, Ginger, oh, no. When we moved in here, we were told by the previous tenants that there's kind of a grandfatherly-like appearance, a ghost in there. She said, it happened to us. They, at the time, didn't have any kids. She said, sometimes when we sleep in, the curtains are closed. We wake up and one curtain is slightly open so that the sun shines right into our face as if somebody says, okay, you young people, time to get up. I said, no, I said, now you're kidding. Now you're making a joke, right? And she said, no, that's true. And I have never checked it, but later she said the house is in St. James Street in Victoria, BC, that it's somewhere in one of those books you find at travel stores, airport, train station, bus stop, and so on, that you find ghost houses of BC. There, this house is supposedly somewhere mentioned, but I still didn't really believe it. So I went upstairs and then I thought, oh, don't want to step on the remote that I had put next to the air mattress last night. Then I was looking, oh, it's not there. So then I looked across the room, the head end of the bed, there it was, nice and neat, right next to the stereo CD player, which still existed in 2002. So I went downstairs and said to Victoria, did you move the remote from the floor? She said, I was happy to get our son downstairs and make him breakfast. So the ghost, the grandfather type, apparently also very neat dude, had moved the remote and put it next to the CD player. So, and I can never get over this moment where I felt the sleeping bag moving up, the chills I felt. So I cannot explain it. I thought it's a joke when the family living in the house was talking that there's actually an appearance. So this is my ghost story from back then. Can't forget it.
That's an interesting one. So I can't even imagine how freaked out I'd be if I was just laying there and I felt a sleeping bag sliding down and I absolutely was not moving it.
Yeah.
So they knew about this and they didn't, of course, tell you before you fell asleep that night.
No, it had never come up. They had moved in and, well, it's one of those things. If some old people, previous tenants, tell you there's a ghost in the house, you say, yeah, sure. Okay, thanks for telling us. But who the heck believes that and says, ooh, yeah, there's something happening. They just had the odd occurrence that something was cleaned up, that closed. They were still pretty young, that they had thrown on the floor, that they were lying on the bed. Or like I said, the curtain was slightly open in the morning suddenly to make them get up, feel the sun on their face. So since then, I have this image of grandfather, really old dude, sitting in a rocking chair in the corner. It's only in this room that this happened, in no other part of the house. So who's sitting there rocking back and forward and kind of watching over you. That morning he was probably telling me, hey, your family is up, they're all sitting down there in the kitchen, want to get up anytime soon, let me help you here.
You think he knows kung fu?
Yeah.
Let me tell you my ghost story, Ralph. So I had this really crazy thing happen to me when I was a kid. I shared a room with my brother, so we had bunk beds, right?
Yeah.
He was older than me, so he got the top bunk. And of course, like, you know, the older kid would. And I got the bottom bunk.
Of course.
Yeah. So I was like 9 or 10, and he was, you know, in his teenager. But I woke up in the middle of the night. I don't know why. But like you just said, I felt like something weird was going on. And the way our bed sat, you could see directly out the bedroom door into the dining room kitchen area.
Yeah.
I wake up and I feel something's not right. I see my brother's arm hanging over the bed like he always slept that way. Like you could see it through the rail on the bunk bed. You know what I mean? And I kind of glance out the door and I see the creepiest thing ever that I still think about today. I see three people standing there. It looks like a father-sized figure, a mother-sized figure, then a child. Their faces are completely blank. There's no face at all, but their figures are there. I can see what clothing they were wearing, and they just continuously would wave at me.
Oh, I get to chills right now.
I didn't know, because you have that moment, and I still don't really know to this day. Was I sleeping and dreaming or not? So I remember I was looking around. Am I dreaming? Everything looked real. You know, I just put a poster up that day. It was hanging on the wall. I could see my brother. Everything seemed so real. And I could see laundry on the floor like it was. And they were still just staring at me, waving. So I put my head under the blankets and I hid for a couple minutes. I looked again. They were still standing there waving. My parents' room was across the house. So you're like, I don't want to scream, right? Because you don't know what'll happen. And I don't even know if I'm dreaming or not. Like, is this real? So I hid under the blankets for hours till I fell asleep. And I woke up and I still don't know to this day if it was real or not. But I always keep the bedroom door closed now because of that experience.
Isn't it strange how something like this forms our habits? And even creepier that they were still there when you looked the second time.
Yeah, I still don't know if I was dreaming or not. It just seems so damn real. I just don't know, but it was the creepiest thing ever. They were just waving. No faces at all, but I could see, it was dark in there, obviously, but I could see they're wearing, like, the dad was wearing a flannel shirt. I could see the kid was wearing a dress. I could see the figures, but just not their face at all. It was like non-existent. It was like a black hole where their face was, but they're waving in sequence. Creepiest thing ever.
Well, when I think about this, if a dream, I don't think would last that long in your life to leave such an imprint that the images are still alive today. So
yeah, I don't know.
Those are some of the stories. We experience them. We can never forget them. And we still feel the details. So there too, in my story there, I knew I was awake. It was just this moment from sleep coming out of it, being awake, and obviously going down the stairs, having the talk with the family. You have those moments sometimes late in the evening where it makes you think, what is that? What was that? I'm not sure. It's sometimes hard to explain. It's the same as, if you want to hear it, my UFO story.
Yeah, let's do it, because I've never had one, but I am very intrigued by it. I listen to that UFO podcast with my friend Andy McGrillin every week, but I don't have an experience, so I'm excited to hear yours.
It was again, strangely enough, it was again it wasn't on Vancouver Island. It was on the coast facing Vancouver Island. This happened in July of 2009. We had gotten an invitation from a friend. He had a cabin deep in the rainforest at the Sunshine Coast of British Columbia. So my daughter was had been born in 2003. So it was 2009. We were on the way through logging roads with a regular car. I remember at one point we were going up and up, and you could see through the windshield only the sky. And then suddenly the car started to move forward, and we were hoping, oh, geez, let's hope this is still the road and not some cliff. So it was the road. We went down and barely made it to this log cabin. So it's what everybody imagines a log cabin in Canada in the woods would be. Water pump, no electric light, everywhere candles. It felt great. So it was almost so twilight time. We went down the hill from that house because we had been told there's a lake down there. Went near the lake. There was a part where the boats are tied up from the few people that had log cabins in the wood. We were standing on this part on the planks there, and suddenly we all jumped up. There was a seal having his head right there on the wood, on this part of the walkway towards the water where we were standing on, and he just looked at us with those black eyes, went back into the
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, of course, you're surrounded by nature. We had a bear bell with us and bear spray and all of this stuff. So they're looking across the water. It was peaceful. You could see a little town on the other side of this lake. There were some lights on our end. It was almost getting pitch dark. The kids were with a stick in the water, playing around, throwing rocks at the water. Then you could see a helicopter going across the lake. So you could hear the noise. This Then there was an airplane going across the sky. You could see the flashing lights on the wings left and right. Was that nice? Then, I don't know, it's a thing. Sometimes you look into the sky, where's the North Star? We know it's not the brightest star, but it's sometimes a thing to look at. And then I saw above us, much, much brighter than the North Star, a dot very slowly across the sky. So I thought first, I had seen it in Ontario, that I'd seen satellites at another place. I had seen even once the International Space Station, which was super cool. That was back in Ontario. So I first thought, oh, no, it's not a space station that looked different. Doesn't seem to be a satellite, but then who knows? And I told the kids, hey, Samantha, Tyrone, look up in the sky. And they, And at this moment, you know those movies when there's an earthquake and then you see a big shot at the needle racing on the paper from the left to the right, so that as a viewer, you really feel, oh my gosh, there's an earthquake happening. This white dot all of a sudden had moved left and right across the sky, this fast, back, forward, back, forward. My daughter, she was still very young. She said, whatever. Didn't interest her. My son said, oh, that's NASA doing experiments. I said, yeah, sure. And then the next moment, this dot went again across the sky very slowly, just when you see satellites in the sky. Then I said again, everybody look up. This thing was again racing across the sky, which must have been, I don't know, hundreds of kilometers to the left, hundreds of kilometers to the right. And then again, on the very spot, and continued slowly the path where we had seen it twice before. And suddenly, it was gone. We were standing there. I thought, what the heck was that?
Did it disappear? Did it like shoot off and disappear? Like, or just disappear out of nowhere?
Just disappeared. It was there one moment, and the next fraction of a moment, it was just gone. And we all stood there, and I thought, okay, so said to Victoria, you saw it, right? Yep. I said to Tyrone, you saw it. Oh, yeah, I saw the NASA satellite. I said to my daughter, to Samantha, you saw that too. She, yeah, I saw it. I said, okay, we all saw it. Four people saw it.
That helps verify that you're not crazy, right?
yeah, because no, sometimes, you don't know, no, people in British Columbia or in Vancouver, they always made fun of me when I once in a while told the story because of it being kind of the weed capital. Everyone was saying, so did you have a couple of joints before that? I said, no, I had nothing. I don't smoke. Never in my life had a joint. That's actually true. I said, no, I didn't have anything. And most people, yeah, right. You saw stuff shooting across the sky. Cool, man. I said, no, we really saw it. There's four people that can see it. So we had a friend of the family. He worked at a big university there in the physics and astronomy apartment as an education specialist. He had done the commentary for Canadian TV at one of the starts of the space shuttle. He'd done tours of the astronomy lab and so on. So I asked him a week later, I said, Peter, explain to him everything we had seen. I said, can you tell me with your knowledge of what's going on in the sky, what that is? I said, can't be any light shining into the skies in this little town. There's not a club that they have at night, those lights in the sky or anything like this. And he said, no, I can't explain it. I said, but you have heard a lot of unidentified flying objects. Any time you heard anything like this? He said, no. So still within 2 weeks after this had happened, I thought, hey, let's have a look. And of course, there was a website, UFO sightings in British Columbia. And I, oh my gosh, never seen that before. So I went back 2 weeks to that day. And 2 days later, there was an entry. So anybody can put stuff in there. There's probably all kinds of weirdos and freaks as well. But there was something. We are grandparents of two lovely children. We live in our cabin at this lake. And ha! Said, that is the very same lake we were standing on. He said, our grandkids came in and said, Grandpa, Grandma, come outside. There's something in the sky. We grabbed our binoculars, and then they had described the very same. They had seen a helicopter going across this airplane, and then this dot across the sky, and that just like a needle on the display for an earthquake, that it went across. But they had binoculars, and he said, they saw it, this white spot with their binoculars, and there was in the middle, which we had not seen with the naked eye, that in the middle was a rotating orange circle. And then they said, and at one point after the second time when it raced across the sky, which must have been a humongous distance, no airplane can hundreds of kilometers left and right suddenly move, that's virtually impossible. So our grandkids told us we should write it down here. So we have done it. We're no weirdos. Please believe us. So I thought, wow, there are other people who had seen the very same. Didn't get an explanation for it, but now there were more witnesses to it. So up to this day, I have no idea what it was, but I've seen something that qualifies as an unidentified flying object.
Do you follow the activities, what's going on today around the UFOs? Because it's almost more acceptable now, right? Like, it's more mainstream public attention.
Yeah, I've seen the papers that were released just a year or two ago in Great Britain from the Air Force. I had the pleasure once, father of one of my Kung Fu students who I've met also in Victoria and on Vancouver Island. He was a pilot during World War II. He was honored by the Queen. He was honored by the Canadian government. He had developed a plane that's still being used by cadets of the Canadian Air Force today. And he was saying when they were flying maneuvers before they went over to Germany, that it was among the pilots just off the coast of England very common that every now and then there was a circle of lights in front of them. Then he said suddenly there were half of them on the left wing, half of them on the right wing. Then they were gone. Another pilot said, then they're on your, I don't know what it is, I don't speak the lingo, on your 6 o'clock, so on your tail. And many of them were telling those stories, but they said when they came home to Canada that they didn't want to be basically labeled as weirdos, that they held back. And he told me that story. My student Gary, he remembered it having as a kid heard already because they had to move with their father from one military job to the next across the country, also to the US. So, and he had all those certificates over the wall. He still had a huge frame on the wall with a piece of a parachute where he had been shot down over Germany, still with bullet holes in it, and then the commendation from the Queen next to it. So that's not somebody who's making stuff up just for the heck of it. So, which also made me think, so I had told him then my story about this UFO, and he said, well, most pilots don't like to talk about it. He said, to them, it appeared during World War II as if those lights were, I don't know, like people, beings from somewhere else who are watching everything that's happening. And every now and then, they also just wanted to have fun and played with us. We went into the cloud, they came into the cloud, and then they were shining much brighter in there. So he said, because of the combat that they experienced, they never thought much of it. It became just a thing that happened every day. Those lights typically disappeared when they were approaching Germany for their next job. So, and he found my story as the most normal. He said, there's a lot out of there that we just don't know what it is. So, and that's why when there are quiet moments, especially at night, and I'm thinking about my ghost encounter, my UFO encounter, then you start to think, what the heck does this all mean? And it also comes in handy when it's Halloween and you want the moment to be a little bit scary and spooky. You said earlier that you thought you were possibly asleep, that you were dreaming. There I have this half story. I said at the very beginning, I basically have 2.5 stories, the UFO, the ghost, and then a half story. When I was a prisoner at the Stasi, at the East German Secret Service, when you're being interrogated day and night, when you're being threatened with the death penalty, even you wake up trembling in the morning when the guards yell to get up. And in the evening, if you can sleep through the night, if they don't get you again for a nighttime interrogation, all you wish is to disappear in your dreams. So in this time, that's why I'm telling the story, I somehow developed this sense of being aware when I'm dreaming that I'm dreaming. And I remember one particular scene. I was in the train. I was looking out of this train. There was a huge valley, peaceful. I guess that's what I needed at the time, something peaceful. I could hear birds. There were nice clouds in the sky. It was sunny. Strange thing. I was looking at other passengers and I was thinking, how the heck does the brain make up the faces? How can I see the valley, the trees, the grass, hear the birds, smell the air? So it's not just the visual, I could smell it. But in the dream, I was thinking, so I'm dreaming, okay? So if I just whack somebody in the face just for fun, just for the heck of it, nothing can happen. But I could never do it. Once in a dream, because you do the thing, you go up on top of a building. Hey, I'm dreaming, so I can jump off of it, right? I could never do it. But once, I don't know in which moment, I was flying, and boy, did this feel good. I was upstream in the air, going up, going down, sailing right, left. There was nothing around me but fresh air, and I was flying. I don't know if it was the brain creating an image so that I get a break during this interrogation time by one of the world's most feared secret services at the time. I have no idea, but it felt wonderful. And to this day, every now and then when I'm dreaming, I realize it, but I still have to interact normally with the people that I see, feel in my dream.
Yeah, it's hard to bring yourself to do that. You want to know if it's real or not, but and how what you can do, like what your limitations are, but it's hard to actually take that step.
I could get myself once to fly, and it worked out wonderfully, and it was such a great feeling. But yeah, that's the half story, to be in your dream, aware that you're dreaming, but you cannot really change your pattern. That is also something really, really strange. I don't know how it happens. That would be something for a dream expert to determine.
Yeah, I'm certainly no dream expert. I don't know about you, but...
No, not at all.
I wish I could do more sleeping and dreaming, but...
Oh, yeah. Don't we wish every now and then that we could sleep deeper, longer, dream something nice to escape from everything that sometimes bothers us during the day? But yes, the only thing sometimes I think, wow, that's really cool. And I'm trying to think up paranormal encounters, but during the dream, it's simply not happening. So I only have two real-world encounters. Don't know what to make of them, though I can't explain them, but I find them extraordinarily cool that they did happen.
One of them being 20 years ago and the other one over a decade now. It's still something that you're going to remember the rest of your life, though.
Oh, absolutely. They're still so fresh. I could instantly slip in that moment. We all... The older we get, especially with kids, you tell stories about the past. And I guess I have a few stories to tell, and I like telling them. You also realize that some memories fade, that some memories have left you. But those two, they're still so bright, so instantly accessible and exciting.
Yeah, some things that you have a lot of memories, some will fade and go, but the ones like that will, yeah, last forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, like I said, Ralph, I really appreciate you taking the time to tell these stories, and we're definitely going to have to get you back on here to talk about all the other cool things that you're involved in now and all of your, well, to put it lightly, crazy past experiences that you've had.
Yeah.
It's an interesting story that I think a lot of people should hear. So we're definitely going to have to get you back on here.
I would love to, because there's still a whole set of stories that we didn't even have time to cover in the three episodes with Ian's Cold War History podcast, everything that happened after Germany was reunited. So there's a whole bunch of stories there, some of which really surfaced during the last couple of years that I've been back in Germany. And I tell you, there's still a lot more.
We'll take the time today to get into all that. And I will put a lot of this stuff in the show notes so the people listening to this can go and check out you on Ian's podcast, Cold War Conversations, and also your all the kung fu and great stuff that you're involved in. Hey, Ralph, I appreciate it. Thanks again. And I really appreciate everybody joining in and listening to this Halloween episode. Thanks for listening and thanks for telling a friend.